Today is Friday, May 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a personal valet to the president tests positive for the coronavirus. The president says he and the vice president are fine.
In fact, I had one yesterday and I had one today, and it's negative. Mike just had a test and it's negative.
Kenyan authorities closed two neighborhoods deemed coronavirus hotspots, leaving authorities cut off and some shoppers trapped. Also ahead, a prominent British Nigerian rapper has lost his battle with the coronavirus. It's all on today's International Edition. Deaths from the novel coronavirus topped 75,000 Thursday in the United States as the White House shelved a step-by-step guide prepared by health officials to help states safely reopen. National Institutes of Health Director Francis Collins testified before a Senate committee Thursday and said tests for COVID-19 need to be more readily available across the nation.
As America moves back into public spaces but seeks to avoid increased infections with COVID-19, tests have to be more accessible, ideally to people at the point of care, to make it easier for everyone to get tested.
Collins said existing technology for tests still rely on sending samples to labs for results, and new technologies must be developed to deliver more widely distributed and rapid results on site. Well, deaths in the U.S. have averaged about 2,000 per day since mid-April, and while it is spreading in many states, Governor Andrew Cuomo says his state of New York, which has been the U.S. epicenter of the virus, is slowly starting to improve. He said Thursday, though, reopening will be slow and methodical and not a choice between the economy and people's lives.
We have to reopen, get the economy running, and we have to protect public health. I mean, this is not a situation where you can go to the American people and say, okay, how many lives are you willing to lose to reopen the economy?
Hospitalizations continue to decrease slowly to under 8,700 in New York, but the daily death toll has hovered around 230 for about 4 days. A personal valet to President Trump who has served him meals has tested positive for the coronavirus. According to the White House, the president and vice president have since tested negative for the virus and remain in good health. President Trump was asked about it by reporters on Thursday.
I've had very little personal contact with this gentleman. Know who he is, good person, but I've had very little contact. Mike has had very little contact with him.
Most White House staffers do not appear to be wearing masks. The economic devastation from the coronavirus continues to savage nations around the world. 33 million people have sought U.S. unemployment benefits since the virus hit, and nearly 3.2 million workers applied for jobless aid just last week. PNC Financial Services Group chief economist Gus Fauché tells the Associated Press the enormity of the impact can't be understated.
Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, initial claims were about 200,000 per week. So they're now about 16 times higher than what we saw.
Fauché says the layoffs have hit a broad spectrum of sectors in the U.S., even some you wouldn't expect, like the medical field.
It's even starting to spread like industries like healthcare, where a lot of elective surgeries have been canceled. People aren't going in to visit their doctor. And so we're seeing layoffs in healthcare, even with all the attention to the pandemic.
Zimbabwe is seeking talks with foreign creditors to clear decades of debt and warning that without more funds, the cash-strapped government may not be able to cope with the economic impact from COVID-19. Zimbabwe's struggling economy is further slumped due to the coronavirus lockdowns. As Columbus Mavunga reports, critics of the request say Zimbabwe has a history of corruption and failure to service its debt.
Zimbabwe's minister in charge of mobilizing resources to fight COVID-19, July Moyo, says the country is now relying on its usual friends after the International Monetary Fund refused to provide funds to help the Southern African nation reduce the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
As you know, IMF was asked by the UN Secretary General, and an appeal was made to say indebted countries, IMF should give them a reprieve. But for Zimbabwe, we could not be given a reprieve because we had paid our debt. But the World Bank has been giving us assistance, our PPEs and certain medicines. The World Bank is funding, and so yes, we are getting assistance from our usual friends, Chinese, the British, the Americans, European Union, Indians, and some from our neighbors in Southern Africa, even though they also are suffering from coronavirus pandemic.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Finance, Muthuli Ncube, wrote to the IMF for financial assistance and cancellation of its debt so the country could divert its funds to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. But Tendai Biti, an opposition leader and a former finance minister, says Zimbabwe does not deserve assistance from the IMF or international creditors. He says due to corruption and excessive spending, Zimbabwe was in a crisis long before COVID-19 pandemic.
That's an embarrassing letter you referred to. Accepted acknowledges already that the economy contracted by 6% in 2019. And in 2020, our contraction is -20%, the worst in the history of the country. So no one should use or hide under COVID.
But not everyone agrees with the opposition's view. Trust Chihokora, an independent economic analyst, says President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government should get financial support to kickstart Zimbabwe's fragile economy and limit the effects of COVID-19 pandemic.
As everybody is aware, Zimbabwe does not have resources at the moment to do this because of the state of the economy. And so multilateral institutions should support Zimbabwe in order to contain this pandemic, which is global in nature. And so notwithstanding any previous positions that institutions could be holding or that other countries may be holding,
Zimbabwe is not one of 25 countries benefiting from an IMF program designed to help address the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. An official at the IMF said the organization would explain that position sometime this week. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Kenya has closed two neighborhoods, one in the capital, Nairobi, and the other in the coastal city of Mombasa, after a surge in confirmed cases of coronavirus. Kenyan authorities have confirmed 607 infections and 29 deaths, with dozens of the infections found in Nairobi's Eastleigh area and Mombasa's Old Town. Many of the neighborhood residents fled as lockdowns were announced. Rael Ambor reports from Nairobi.
From Burhan Iman's hotel window, he saw a journalist setting up his equipment for interviews on Thursday morning. Shortly afterwards, he says a crowd gathered. Everyone wanted to be interviewed. They wanted to ask why the government has stopped movement in and out of Isili, a neighborhood in the east of Nairobi's central district. Some of those engaging the journalists, just like Iman, were stranded overnight in Isili after the government announced that it was sealing off the neighborhood for 15 days after dozens of coronavirus cases were recorded in the area.
We did not get a prior notice. They were ambushed. I wish they could have noticed people, tell them prior that they are going to put the lockdown in Isili, so that people who are not from Isili, they could get time to go out from Isili.
Iman, who works in Isilee but lives in Nairobi's South Sea Estate, was shopping for his wedding with his fiancée when the area was cordoned off. He says many people have been trying to flee Isilee, either on foot or by car. But Kenyan Ministry of Health official Dr. Rashid Arman warned that those leaving the area are making the coronavirus problem worse.
We have observed that arising from the directives, some people have decided to sneak out of these areas and to relocate to the neighboring estates. Let me caution that this move is counterproductive and dangerous. This is because if you happen to be infected unknowingly, then you have just transferred the problem to another area.
In Old Town Mombasa, 59-year-old Mahmud Garwan woke up Thursday morning to get some breakfast at a local supermarket. It was closed. He was told most employees were not able to report to work, as most lived outside the area. Garwan, who runs an insurance firm in Mombasa city center, says that he could also not go to work because of travel restrictions.
If we had been given about 3 days' notice, then at least we could have stocked up. But then on the other hand, it is okay since we are allowed, we say containment order actually. So we are allowed to move around the area. You know, it came as a surprise.
Earlier this month, the Ministry of Health announced that it had identified certain areas, including Old Town and Isili, as potential hotspots for the coronavirus. Last week, the ministry began mass testing in high-risk areas, and the tests have increased the number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Kenya. In an effort to encourage more volunteer testing, the government on Wednesday announced that it would pay quarantine costs for those in government isolation facilities. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. China said Thursday it supports the World Health Organization in trying to pinpoint the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic and accused U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo of telling one lie after another in his attacks on Beijing. The virus has killed more than 255,000 people worldwide, including more than 70,000 in the U.S., the worst affected country since it was first identified in the Chinese city of Wuhan in December. Well, the World Health Organization says a novel coronavirus could kill between 83,000 and 190,000 people in Africa in the first year and infect between 29 and 44 million in the first year if it's not contained. The projections in the new WHO Africa study is based on assumptions that no containment measures are put into place. It also reported Thursday that calls to domestic violence hotlines in Europe are up by as much as 3/5. The WHO says alcohol and drug abuse combined with close confinement and coronavirus lockdowns are fueling abuse of the most vulnerable. The stress and anxiety bred by weeks of restrictions on public life have made uncertainty, separation, and fear part of daily life for many. Stay with VOA for all the latest U.S. and world news.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you don't go to school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA's International Edition continues. The International Organization for Migration warns growing discrimination against migrants who often are blamed for spreading the coronavirus impedes efforts to tackle the pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
International Labor Organization economists warn lockdown measures to contain the spread of COVID-19 will increase poverty among the world's 2 billion informal workers. Jobs in the informal sector exist in all regions of the world, but they are most prevalent in low-income countries. The ILO says those people are vulnerable to any economic shock that threatens their jobs and livelihood. Most informal workers, it says, live in a high state of insecurity. They have no social protections and no money to act as a cushion against hard times if they are out of work. Chief of the ILO's in-work branch, Philippe Macadam, says informal workers, already poor and vulnerable in so-called normal times, now face new risks from the coronavirus pandemic.
At the end of April, we estimated that lockdown measures significantly impacted 1.6 billion workers in the informal economy. For many, no works mean no income.
An ILO report finds workers in the informal economy of Latin America and the Arab states suffer most from lockdowns, followed by those in Africa, Asia and the Pacific, Europe and Central Asia. A press release on the report says most informal workers who have no other means of support face the dilemma of either dying from hunger or from the virus. Marcadin says most of the people in the informal economy who get sick are not covered by Social Security or any sort of health plan.
This means many will be forced to go into debt or to sell their productive assets to pay for health care, plunging them even more deeply in poverty. Many will not be able to get access to health care. That's it. In addition to possible dramatic consequences for themselves, this will contribute to the spread of the virus.
The report highlights the need to protect informal workers by setting policies that reduce their exposure to the virus. It says those who get sick must have access to health care, and governments should provide income and food support to them and their families. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And the U.S. Justice Department is dropping its criminal case against ex-Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Prosecutors have maintained for years that Flynn lied to the FBI in 2017 about his talks with Russia's ambassador, and the retired three-star general himself admitted as much in pleading guilty. But the Justice Department says it's abandoning the case after reviewing the facts and circumstances, a move the president hailed in the Oval Office.
He was an innocent man.
Accusing Obama administration officials of targeting Flynn and saying they should pay a big price.
They're scum. They're human scum.
While the decision could energize Trump supporters who've adopted Flynn as a cause, it will also add to Democratic complaints that Attorney General William Barr is too loyal to the president. Sagar Magani, Washington.
World-famous chef Jose Andreas has mobilized his restaurants in Washington, D.C. and New York to help those in need during the coronavirus pandemic by cooking and giving away free food. But the scale of the national lockdown is so great, the chef now says he's going further by turning giant sports stadiums into makeshift kitchens. Karina Bafrajan has the story.
D.C.-based chef Jose Andres announced his plans to use temporarily empty stadiums for charity purposes back in March when the coronavirus pandemic started to accelerate. To feed the many people who found themselves in need because of the national lockdown, Andres and his charity organization called World Central Kitchen needed a big kitchen. The National Spark Baseball Stadium in Washington, D.C. was just about right.
We've used the stadiums before, arenas before. They are so important. They are part of the community in the good times, but they are also an important part of being part of the community in emergency times. So inside here, we're using the kitchens. We're going to be producing thousands of meals, tens of thousands.
The stadium staff was glad to help out.
We wanted to figure out what we could do with the ballpark to help people with COVID-19. We're very good at making a lot of food. We do it for all of our fans on a regular basis, and we have amazing facilities. So we reached out to Jose Andreas' team and said, hey, we'd love to partner with you. Are you guys interested in using the ballpark for your kitchen operations here in Washington, D.C.?
The stadium's spacious kitchen allows 50 people to work side by side every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The food is balanced and packed with nutrients, meat, vegetables, rice, and fruits. Cooked food is packed into containers and Uber Eats drivers deliver them to their destination. Hospitals, nursing homes, low-income homes, and areas where homeless people congregate. Despite the size of the operation, everyone involved stays safe.
When you come into the area that we're working, we're doing a temperature check for everybody. So they're checking, you're doing a scan of your forehead to make sure that you don't have a fever and that your temperature is below 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And then once you do that and you've been cleared, we ask you to put your personal belongings away in a special area.
The effort by Jose Andres is not limited to Washington, D.C. Thanks to donations and financial support from sponsors, the chef and his team from World Central Kitchen cook thousands of meals that get delivered to other American cities throughout the country as well. Andres says there is no deadline. He and his team will keep doing what they're doing as long as it's necessary. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
Major airlines are requiring passengers to wear face masks during flights to protect passengers and also crew members against the coronavirus. And as a temporary measure, some are blocking middle seats for free or charging for it to create spacing between passengers. They're also suspending snacks and beverage services to limit interaction. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo spoke to the CEO of Frontier Airlines and files this report.
Passengers are now required to wear a face mask or covering to board a flight on a major airline, including JetBlue, American, United, Southwest, Frontier, and Lufthansa, among others. Frontier Airlines Chief Executive Officer Barry Biffle says other measures are also being taken.
We started with enhanced cleaning procedures, as well as the fogging of our aircraft that kills the virus on contact. We started doing health certifications of our passengers almost a month ago. And last week we announced, which goes into effect this Friday, that everyone will be required to wear facial coverings.
Captain John Cox, former head of air safety for the Airline Pilots Association, salutes the move.
They're trying to be very conservative and doing two things. One is maximizing passenger safety, but also providing tangible evidence to the passengers that they are taking health and safety very seriously.
Many flights have been nearly empty since the outbreak started, but recently passengers started posting photos of more crowded planes with travelers who are not wearing face covering or observing basic social distancing guidelines. Passenger Princess Johnson describes a recent flight.
It was like a claustrophobic scene. That's how it felt to me, because we didn't have space. If someone sneezed, we all would have been sick.
But Mike Ritchie had a different experience.
Good flight. Not so many people. Plane got up fast. Plane landed fast. The flight attendants made sure everybody was spaced well, and I'd fly again if I had to.
Southwest Airlines officials say workers are cleaning every surface of their aircrafts with an electrostatic disinfectant, which kills viruses on contact. Other measures, eliminating snacks and beverages to limit social interaction and not putting passengers in middle seats to ensure greater social distance. But other airlines are filling middle seats, saying requiring face masks is sufficient. Frontier is charging $39 to keep the middle seat empty.
For the last month, we've been blocking every other row. I know some airlines have been blocking some middle seats, but they're not guaranteed. And so that's why we introduced the guaranteed option of the middle seat being blocked next to you. But the bottom line is you don't need that to be safe on Frontier.
Biffle adds his company will receive $170 million in federal funds under the CARES Act passed in March that provides economic relief due to the COVID-19 crisis. This, he says, will help Frontier cover half of its payroll costs until September. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Books are back on the market as South Africa slightly eases its lockdown restrictions to allow the sale of educational items. Booksellers in the nation's literary capital of Johannesburg intend to interpret all books, including thrillers, fantasy, and romance novels, as educational items. VOA's Anita Powell catches up with a prominent Johannesburg bookseller and a few South African writers who explain why they believe all books matter.
For bookseller and writer Griffin Shea, South Africa's 35-day total lockdown made for a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad month. Just a week before the lockdown started in late March, he was putting the finishing touches on his downtown Johannesburg store, Bridge Books, which specializes in African literature. Then, everything shut down. Sales plunged 90%. The entire industry suffered. Two major South African magazine publishers went out of business in recent weeks. Now, as South Africa begins to slowly ease the lockdown, books of educational value are allowed for sale. Most booksellers are taking a very liberal view of that, because, as a recent open letter signed by thousands of prominent South African writers and intellectuals argues, all books have educational value. Shea agrees.
So under this level 4 restriction, we're supposed to only be selling educational books, which is not defined. But for example, at my son's school, they don't have set reading anymore. They go in and propose what they want to read to the teacher, and the teacher approves it. So basically that means we need to be able to sell all novels and all poetry and all long-form nonfiction if we're going to let people read what they need.
Shea says he's had no problems from the police since he relaunched internet sales this week. Actually, he says a few officers have stopped by his store, checked on his hygiene measures, and then bought books. This reporter, who is an avid reader, also took the opportunity to immediately order a stack of volumes for delivery, including a novel by talented South African writer Ivan Vladislavich. He teaches creative writing at a local university and was one of the letter's more than 3,300 signatories. Vladislavich.
For me, the book is still the most vital carrier of the human story in all of its complexity and diversity. And I think it's very important in these times when people are separated from one another physically and societies are under extreme stress. I think that the windows that books open onto the world become even more important.
Vladislavich says books have been essential to his lockdown experience. He says he's recently been immersed in a gripping new dystopian novel by prize-winning South African author Barbara Adair. But why actual printed books? Writer and activist Eleanor Sisulu runs the Puku Children's Literature Foundation and notes that in highly unequal South Africa, physical bound books are still vital and should be widely available.
Yeah, physical books are important because some people don't have electricity, they don't have data. They can't share easily. We've got older people who don't have the Kindle or Kobo or Apple. So I don't think it's an either or. I think there must be a space for both. I love my Kindle. I mean, my Kindle is like a person. If I lose my Kindle, I get distraught. So it's important to me, but I think the physical books are just as important.
Griffith Shea says he hopes that this 35-day book drought might even inspire bigger change in South Africa, like elimination of sales tax on books. In his view, they are essential goods, just as much as food and clothing. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And finally today, tributes have been pouring in across the UK music scene following the news that rapper Ty, British-Nigerian Mercury Prize-nominated musician, has died from complications of the coronavirus at the age of 47. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Bungani, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Please take care of yourselves, be well, and have a great weekend. King Cole, unforgettable soul that does not walk the path that Johnny Cash controls. Ring the bell, but don't move for whom the bell tolls. Fallen fashions need to run and sell clothes.
No popularity contests, I'm trying to make meaningful music, my conquest is under shape. Whoever's on it, build the sonics far and wide. Close the distance, let's get real platonic and roll. Out of thin air is not my habit. Please give me room, let me work my magic. No day off, work.